And it's Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And tonight I'm honored and graced to have Bart Smith here with me today.
Thank you very much.
It's always a pleasure and a great honor to have you because we always have, very interesting talks. And I'm sure tonight, because it's on the pathway to healing, that it should be a fascinating evening.
Let's hope so.
We also know that there are going to be people that are going to call in. What I ask you to do is first let's talk a little bit about the topic. And when you do call in, if it goes into a machine, it means somebody else has already called in. Mm-hmm. And also, when you go to call in, please turn your computer down because there will be a delay and it will be very confusing with you.
Your sound, yeah.
Yeah, the sound, because you'll think that we're pausing, and anyway, it will be very confusing. So turn your computer down and just listen to us talk. All right. So
Think first we need to talk about this amazing cat who's been entertaining.
He has been quite entertaining.
Very entertaining. So I think that as a whole, we are at an amazing point within the evolution of ourselves and as a society. And as much as the world is going through tremendous change, it also means that we're going through turmoil. Mm. And so we're redefining ourselves. And so we have adopted a particular core ideology of who we are and how we fit in to our family, our own lives, a city, a country, yeah, and a culture. So if we look at what's happening throughout the world, we're really redefining, is this who I am?
Mm.
So the basic fundamental question is, who are we, where are we going, and what are we doing?
I've heard that somewhere before.
I would say so. And so those are very incredible questions to ask, because if you say, who are we, I think we could come up with many different answers. And it is a unfamiliar concept for a culture to say, who am I? I am the child of God. Instead of, I am the daughter of, or the wife of, or the brother of. And so we've associated ourselves with our upbringing.
And our...
There we go, the phone is starting to ring.
It's starting to ring. Okay, let me answer this. Hello? Hello? Hello, are you wanting to call on Intuitive Soul Radio? I'm not sure what happened there.
A ghost caller. So if we look at the overall, we are, the concept of that we are spiritual beings having emotional experiences to spiritual beings having spiritual experiences, mm-hmm, you know, that entire concept by itself is beginning to sink in. So we as a culture have said, okay, we can put this person into power. And now we're beginning to say as a culture, but what happens if this person no longer defines the ideology or the mainstream perception or consciousness? So we look at the United States. People are no longer saying, yes, we put this man into power. Now the country is saying, can we take someone out of power? And so as a culture, it is not because we're beginning to become self-centered or self-absorbed. We're beginning to say, do we have rights as a human being? And that is not so much about if we put this person in power or not. It means we're beginning to realize that we are this divine human being. So if we look at the structural setup, and this is a concept that takes a little bit of contemplation, because by just listening to the words of this particular concept, it doesn't always make a great amount of sense. When we begin to
Well, I know this one's for Intuitive. Do you want to start?
Sure, let's kick it out.
Hello, and welcome to Intuitive Soul Radio. Well, just a second. Welcome to Intuitive Soul Radio. How are you doing?
Hold on, listener. We're trying to.
Yeah, we're trying. Hold on.
Turn on the technology here.
Oh, that's why. Okay, now we should be good.
Okay. Hi, it's Barbara, and I've got a question for you both, really.
All right.
My question is this. With the whole world facing this turmoil and chaos and anxieties and addictions and all this, do whole generations have karma that they have to deal with?
You know, this is a very interesting concept because culturally we have followed in the same tradition. So if we look at a culture, not only do we take on the behavioral patterns of our ancestors, we also are pre-exposed, as science has begun to discover, that we are wired. So our neural pathways, our core ideology and perceptions, and how we respond and how we behave chemically is something that we also adapt along with our own journey and our own karma. So if we look at our culture and we look at where we've come from, this is pretty exciting time. And the reason why that is because we're beginning to get a sense of the egoic self. And the egoic self gives us a false sense of identity of who we are. And as an individual and as a nation, we're beginning to actually look at fear, anxiety, depression. So if we look at the major four major components that we're beginning to address as a culture, are four aspects of karma. One is survival. So if we look at survival, we look from a primitive point of view. So we're looking at survival of financial survival, emotional survival, food, addictions. We're trying to sustain the same behavior as we have, as our ancestor has, as culturally, and we're no longer in agreement because we're beginning to understand how the egoic self has given us a false sense of who we are. Then we have not being heard, which is another aspect of karma. The third aspect of karma is not being seen. And so we constantly feel that we've not been seen or heard. And the fourth part of what we're facing as a culture is abandonment. And so we recreate the same addictions, the same behavior, until we actually realize that I can be an individual that have addictive personalities or have in tremendous stress, and not can I only move beyond the actual stress component or my addiction component. I'm actually, or a culture is actually beginning to get the tools to liberate themselves and not just say, I'm a person that has an eating disorder, or I'm a person of great fear, or I'm a person of inadequacy, or a person who fails in relationships. As a culture, we're actually moving way beyond this concept of actually saying, is this a part of a false sense of my identity? So what's happening is that the inner self is actually our truest identity. And thoughts and emotions and feelings define what we're experiencing, but doesn't define who we are. So we're making a shift that our emotions are no longer necessarily the identity of who we are, that in actuality we're beginning to define because we're beginning to have experiences of the inner self. And the inner self doesn't have abandonment, doesn't have survival issues, doesn't have not being heard, doesn't have not being seen. The inner self is completely in union with God. And over the last, let's say, 100 years, we're going back to the concept of, do I need to find myself or am I already found? Is the inner self something that I need to merge with, or am I that inner self already? So as a culture, we're actually beginning to understand what the ego, which is a sense of our identity or a sense of our personality, that it's there to define what we're experiencing, but not to identify who we are. And people are beginning to go through great internal fear or chaos or anxiety, because not only are they just trying to manage their addictions or their fears or their abandonments, they're actually breaking the cycle of karma that they have continued from one generation to another, because we've managed our behaviors or our addictions, but we've not been able to liberate ourselves as a culture of actually breaking the four predominant karmas that confront us as an overall culture.
And so they're not only the culture that we live in, but there's also the lineage that we were brought into in Absolutely. This world, and then there's also all of our past lives, because the soul sure. collective unconscious as well. So it's all...
How many children grow up thinking that they're adopted?
Yeah.
I did.
But one of the things I'm thinking of, like, let's say our generation's parents were either involved or directly influenced by the Depression and by the Second World War.
Correct.
Our children are sort of annihilating themselves with drugs and addiction.
Correct.
So I'm just wondering if they collectively have, I mean, I see what you're saying on a broad scale, but does it, does that generation, is their thing being, I mean, in a way, they're trying so hard not to be heard by altering themselves.
Correct. And so you have a generation. So if we look at, I'm assuming that we're pretty well the same generation.
I hope so.
That we've look at our generation, we've developed the awareness. If we look at the next generation that comes after us, mm-hmm. that generation, it has a deep sense of self-entitlement. They are involved in getting a sense, but they don't know who they are, where they're going. Mm-hmm. And that's not everyone. They are self-medicating themselves because they've lost the spiritual component. So if you look at the majority, if you look at the baby boomers and you look at people from the age of 50 and 40, this range between 40 and 50 and 60, they are beginning they're beginning to understand that the echoic self has given them a real false sense of identity, and they're beginning to get the concept of the inner self. And so the collective is beginning to change, while the next generation, or a generation, or there's a very large generation, that is absolutely correct. They have lost the sense of who they are, or they have not been able to get the concept that they are the inner self, they are the divine God. While the generation, let's say, from 40, 50, and 60, have been deeply involved in consumerism and in self-medicating themselves with emotions and feelings and power and obtainment. And as they have attained all of these worldly possessions, they're beginning to realize that the core has not been satisfied, and they're beginning to go on to a deep spiritual journey. And as this journey between 40, 50, and 60, or even some 30, you're all of a sudden finding that there's a huge shift, and that's the pivotal point that we are at a culture, because the majority of our culture is the ages of 30, 40, 50, and 60, and they're beginning to get a deeper sense of, I have attained everything, mm-hmm. I have all the wealth, I have all the power, I have attained everything in which I thought would satisfy the basic primitive needs of my identity. And that's why I talked about the four components. One is the primitive survival. They feel that they have attained power, position, money, wealth, and they're realizing that they're still left with a deep sense of dissatisfaction and beginning to return to the core of who they are, which is a human being having spiritual experiences instead of a human being having emotional experiences. They're going beyond the attainments of what they've gotten in their lives.
Hmm. Thank you very, very much.
You are so welcome.
Fight the good fight, kids.
Mm-hmm. And say hi to the dogs for us. We heard them in the back.
This to the next level. If we look at the primitive self, we have the primitive self that follows the rule of the cave. So the primitive self says, I'm an individual that is connected on a cellular level, and that we are all connected as one. So we've developed the sense of, I am an individual living within the cave reality, which is like a pyramid reality. If I don't do what anybody else says, I'm going to be judged by religion. I'm going to be judged by government. I'm going to be judged by my family. I'm going to be judged by... So we've lived within a primitive reality of a pyramid structure that no one really knows who's in charge. Is the church in charge? Is the government in charge? But yet everyone displays authority that we give this power to. And at times, this can be done through religion. This can be done through a guru. This can be done through all kinds of extreme measures where we give that power of self or power of God or power to someone else. Where the shift has occurred within ourselves, we're beginning to realize that, yes, we are a single cell of consciousness. We are connected to the self and to each other. But where the shift has come as a culture, we are beginning to question the pyramid infrastructure that if I don't do as you say, then I can never become the dominant creating force of my life. So there's a shift that's happened within our culture where all of a sudden we are beginning to realize that this universe is solely existing as I am the dominant creating force of my life. That is not saying, oh, look at me and I am the only God. We are all God. We are all divine beings, and that the divine essence dwells within us. And so we've taken the power away of religion and government and control and this very primitive existence, and we're beginning to take responsibility of our own sense of self and saying, okay, so I am the dominant creating force of my life. I am in union with this universe. I am in union with all the universes and, let's say, gods and goddesses beyond my imagination. And I can move beyond the emotions that human beings, again, we go back to primitive survival, not being heard, not being seen, and being abandoned. So if I live within the cave perception, I'm going to be abandoned or feel abandoned or feel rejected, or I'm going to feel that I'm not surviving, or I'm going to be on the edge. We are continuously self-medicating ourselves emotionally, you could say, by surviving. But if this universe is for my divine creation, then I am not in survival mode. Then I am not being, you know, I'm actually being heard, being seen, and I'm not abandoned, and I've never been separate from God. In actuality, I'm in union with God. And this is a difficult concept to even to digest. Mm-hmm. Because from a basic perspective, are you saying, you know, that is it all about me? It isn't about the egoic self. It is about the God self. Mm-hmm. That we are in this divine universe in balance all the time.
And I think there's a part of our emotional self where we're always looking for acceptance and approval and unconditional love. Right. So that seems to push us towards trying to find that or seek that outside of ourselves. Correct. And so that that does push us into the survival mode, or that does push us into all of those four that you're talking about, because we're always seeking, because conditions were put on our love as children.
Right.
And they, not on purpose, but just because that's the best they knew. Yeah.
And so we created this cave primitive perception of survival, and we've played by these rules. And as I talked about earlier on, we're beginning to question not just, is this candidate the ideal candidate to be put in power? But does this person have the consciousness, the awareness? Because as an individual, we are beginning to have the consciousness. And we, is this person a great politician? Or does this person actually have what it takes to be a great leader? And so when we look at a great father figure or a great leader figure, that doesn't mean a father figure in a sense, but someone who is not afraid to stand divinely within his own universe and to speak from such compassion without needing, and it sounds very egotistic, but without the approval of the culture. And so we've looked at this as someone that is being selfish or self-absorbed, instead of, if I am in union with the universe, and I am this divine being created by God. And who am I? I am the child of God. Where am I going? I am in union. I'm going towards the greatest potential. And so we see that potential as being in love with this person, or having this car or this house, and that philosophy has begun to change within our minds.
This is probably another caller. Yep. Hello, this is Intuitive Soul Radio.
Hi, Laurie. It's Susan. How are you?
I'm good.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
If we're conscious of all these things, how do we raise our children? You know, like, I know I use some of the, you know, you can get ice cream if, you know, you eat all your veggies, right? It's that, you know, just as you were talking, you reminded me of that, unconditional love that, you know, the kid wants their mom and dad to be proud of them. But we bring them up with how we were brought up.
Correct.
Those children have it.
So if you look at, let's break this down into sections. So first of all, we're in a culture, if you say to a child, so tell me how you're feeling. I don't know. Tell me how was your day. I don't know.
I get that.
And so what is happening is that children begin to mimic themselves because they don't have the language. And so, yes, we're in a culture, and still by understanding that you cannot build a bridge overnight. So let's talk about consciousness. Consciousness isn't something that you just attain, and this is where it gets a little bit difficult, because when we learn something and we attain knowledge, this knowledge leads to wisdom, and this wisdom leads to liberation. So what we're saying is we learn consciousness through consciousness, which is a difficult concept. But so consciousness creates a bridge of change. And so we don't look at the value of creating the tapestry of awareness. And so as a parent, I'm not going to change my child at once, mainly because I need to create a tapestry. And that tapestry is what's going to weave this little moment and that little moment and that little moment, and we're going to create a tapestry. A child is needing to learn the following. So first of all, tell me how was your day? I don't know. Tell me how was your day? Are you happy? Are you sad? Are you disappointed? Are you angry? First of all, children can break out in these rages of feelings and emotions, but they are not identifying with their emotions. They're not in touch by what they're saying. And so to say to a child, did you have a good day? Did you have a bad day? And for that child to say, I had a great day. Why did you have a great day? Well, because today I did a presentation in front of my class and I felt great. So you feel great because you feel you've accomplished something. What you're doing as a parent is giving the child the ability to articulate his emotions, identify with his emotions, associate with his emotions, and not from a chemical point of view, but from a sense of inner self. So if you were to say the opposite, tell me how was your day? I'm angry. Okay, so you're angry. Tell me, why are you angry? Well, I'm angry because somebody made fun of me in school. Okay, so somebody made fun of you. So tell me, does this person have the power to dictate your reality, your emotions, or what do you need to do right now to get a sense of who you are? Because anyone that can take you from one extreme to another really doesn't have that power. You've just given them that power. So what I'm talking about is education, consciousness, and defining emotions, creating a bridge between...
We're educating them on their emotions so that when they're older, they can realize their emotions that they can separate from, so to speak.
Amen.
Am I getting that?
Yes.
Did I get it?
And I think also, you know, the greatest gift we can give our children is by getting in touch with ourselves.
Right.
You know, really knowing who we are,
right,
and that will transcend down to
right.
them being able to do the
Absolutely.
Same.
Absolutely. I mean, I have two very dear friends who are highly qualified as childhood behavior modification. And so in the majority of parents that come into a therapist that specializes in childhood behavior modification, when they realize that it's about them and not their children, because their children is mimicking, instead of them realizing they have the tools and the consciousness to create the awareness. And if we create awareness and that consciousness, children can say, you know what, I'm angry. You know, I just need 5 minutes to myself. I'm ready to move on, because we've given the tools to say, that's what you're feeling, but it doesn't define you. It tells you what you're experiencing. And as a culture, when we do that, when a parent does that, those children actually get the opportunity to burn away not only their own karma, but their family karma at the same time.
Yeah.
Does that explain it properly for you?
Yes, I'm writing it down.
Well, don't worry, it can be archived and you can listen to it again. And for whoever who called, please, once this call is over, you can call back, okay?
Thank you. So I'm sure all the listeners have just woken up.
Yeah.
This is on, yeah?
It is. It needs to be adjusted when the phone comes on versus in person, so.
Right.
Yeah.
So here we are as a culture, and we have begun to realize that we are this divine being and that we actually are the creator of our universe. So now we're faced with a false sense of our identity. And that is always a huge burning period of our lives, because we have this deep sense of, do you know who I am? And I went to my hairdresser, and I just love this story. And so his brother works for the airlines. Let's take this caller.
Okay. Yep.
And then we'll hang up.
Yeah,
so
okay.
That the reception changes. Or that
shouldn't
stays.
Do that, because I've had interviews where they're on the phone the whole time. Yeah. But
well, it's okay. Life,
it's life
is the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the way it goes. So here we are, and we are now realizing that we have a false sense of who we are, and we're beginning to burn. And that's, for anyone, a huge spiritual awakening. Because we've associated of, I am this, I am that, I am this, but I am God. I am not that. So there's a great saying that says, I am neither this, I am neither that, I am everything, and I am nothing. And that's a difficult concept to say, because as a human being, as soon as I have the awareness that I've attached myself to all these outcomes without realizing, I keep creating the same outcomes. And now I'm beginning to create my own world. And so a person gets to a point of, do you know who I am? Which is an interesting, which is where we started before this caller. So his brother works at the airport, and a very famous actor comes up to the counter, and he doesn't get his way. And this actor gets very angry, and the actor says, do you know who I am? And this man was very cheeky, and this is in Gatwick Airport. And he picks up the intercom and says, ladies and gentlemen, we have somebody here who doesn't know who he is. Could someone please tell us who he is? And I thought this was such a great story, because that is exactly the point to all of this, where we are beginning to go back into the inner self. Consciousness, as I talked about earlier on, are little moments that we wave together. In the retreat in Puerto Vallarta, when I go back through the tapes of interviews and the teachings, that people perceive that meditation or a big awareness or consciousness happens in one big bang. So everybody starts and wants to have this glorious meditation. But what they're dismissing is the majesty of meditation, of each moment. So if I'm a part of this primitive cave pyramid, I'm actually running with time, which is a difficult concept to understand. So I'm a person that is never in the moment, do not understand the power of now, of this particular moment. I have a false sense of my identity, and we're going to take the caller.
Okay. Welcome. You're on Intuitive Soul Radio.
Hi.
Go Hello. Ahead.
Oh, we're going to record this, right?
Yes, we're recording.
Okay. I wanted to ask about, what would you tell a person who is completely associated with, for example, an illness or a lack of purpose in their life, And they understand that their core, like their inner self, is pure and complete, but they can't seem to break out of the cycle of feeling incomplete and inadequate with their primitive so-called human issues they face. And there's all this buzz around healing emotionally spiritually. And they've done it all, they've tried it all, and they're still stuck.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I really appreciate that you're asking this question, because that takes quite a bit to ask this question. So I think we need to hang up, not because I'm going to hang up on you, but we're going to answer the question, but it seems like we're having a little bit of a technical problem.
Although this seems really clear. Your phone is very clear compared to some of the others.
Some of the other people. Yeah. So,
but we are going to hang up. I'm going to hang up and we'll answer the question.
Question.
Okay?
Okay, cool. Great. Thank you.
Okay.
So first of all, there is no right and wrong. And illness or any of these are earth-shattering for anyone. I don't care who you are, you know. And so it is not for me to say why someone has illness. And I very much have a difficulty when someone says, you know, oh, that person has this illness because they're needing to face something within themselves. Well, there's a divine truth in that. But to say that there's not environmental influences that make us sick because we're so out of balance in this, you know, we're not in a natural environment.
Mm.
And particularly, I have to say that when I leave Canada, not because I dislike Canada, but particularly when I go to Puerto Vallarta, I feel the purpose of what I'm about to return. And that is an interesting concept. And so I don't want to spread this out too far, but I have to say that on a personal level, that I require to return to a very simple life that doesn't exist in Toronto. And that sounds very strange. I go to Mexico because I need to feel the ocean. And that sense of freedom that people around me are in their hearts. And I'm not judging Canada and I'm not making that judgment. But sometimes it really requires us to go back to really primitive existence. And I don't mean living in a hut, but basic in the now. And so we go from one therapist to another therapist or one healer to another healer. And none of that is wrong. All of that is good. But I can only tell you from my own experiences that I find it that I need to remove myself and sit on a beach and feel the ocean. And for that duration, merge myself with into the now, into this moment, not 5 minutes, not my illness. Because if I'm thinking about my illness, I am not in the now. If I'm worried about my future, I am not in the now. So I think that there is a, I don't want to say a mental illness within our culture, but we all are out of time. We all have so much to do because time is getting shorter. Because we're running on this treadmill and we're not in the now. So I have to say, not because you need to go to Puerto Vallarta, but I would look at where do you feel the most divine, where you are in union with your environment, and that when you look at the ocean, you are in awe of every drop that is in that ocean, and that in our world that we live in, we are bombarded by so much barrage that when I return on a regular basis, I am overwhelmed for the first 2 weeks by traffic and the satellite. And this does not give you the opportunity to get into the now. I know it's much more difficult. And yes, it is possible to do this here. But if I was facing something of that particular nature, then I would become aware of the power of now. Meditation is something that is dismissed on a regular basis because we see meditation as just something that we're doing. And it's interesting that you're asking this question because in the last little while, I've been seriously becoming aware that do I need to pack up everything and move and give up everything that I've created? Is that something that I need to do? I don't think it's about selling everything and moving to be in a place like Puerto Vallarta. but it is my attachment to what I have considered or become that this is normal. My attachment to, well, I really don't go to Starbucks, but a Starbucks. All these identities. And so how do you deal with being in the Toronto and dealing with that? It means that your meditations need to be so steeped with being in the now. And to burn through that, we cannot be in the center of the mind, but we need to be the witness. And if we judge our meditations, if we have expectations in our meditations, if we don't become the witness, which basically means, let's say you're in meditation and your mind is just roaring around, by stepping out of that, by becoming the witness, what a lot of books talk about is that there is the mind and the witness. Well, what people don't speak about, that there are layers of states of witness, that we can actually experience the mind being the witness of the mind, the witness of the witness, the witness of the witness of the witness. And so we don't burn our karma or illness or attachment only being the witness of the mind. When we begin to realize that there are layers of witness consciousness, and the deeper of detachment we experience, that we actually detach all of our senses, hearing, tasting. So with other words, if your meditations does not have a purpose, you're not going to go anywhere. And a lot of people don't understand that. I don't care how long you've been meditating. So if I'm going to sit in meditation, the purpose of my meditation is to create a bridge from my mind to my heart and to literally recognize and be one completely with the union of my inner self. That would be the purpose. I don't attain the inner self. This inner self is already attained. I become it. I'm not merging. I become it. I become the God self. And so as individuals, and I'm not saying that you've not been a good meditator, and I'm not saying that you have missed the point, but because we're only wanting or believe that we only have the witness that watches the mind, and that's all that we've sought for, or that is all what our goals has been, there are actually seven layers of the witness state. And when we have that concept that we can become the witness of the witness of the witness, when we get into the third layer of the witness state, it's where we can burn the karma or the illness or what plagues us mentally or psychologically. It isn't until we reach the deepest core of that inner layer, which I don't know if this is going to make sense to you listening to this, but if I said to you that this is an illusion and this is a holodeck of reality, 50 years ago, you would have thought I was crazy. And today, we realize this is an illusion. And if I say to you, you need to become the witness, you can say, yeah, I can understand that. But if I said to you, you can move way beyond it, you just haven't thought of it or you haven't imagined it, and you can move way beyond that first witness state and go much deeper, that is where you feel the crackling, the burning, the melting of karma. And there's not a single person on this earth that can do that for you except yourself. And if I did not answer your question, don't be afraid to pick up the phone and call back, because I'm more than willing to go at this with you to help you as much as I possibly can. But if you, the ego, which is very interesting, the ego self or the egoic self, lets us have the first layer of the witness reality. And the ego knows it will drift you in and out of meditations. And so that is why we're having these sort of great experiences and then drifting back, and then sort of a deeper experience and drifting back, and then we go deeper meditation and coming back, because the egoic self keeps playing the violin, or keeps playing us like a violin, breaking us, bringing us back and forth. And because we have never or never thought of or never understood that there are actually seven layers of states of consciousness that have states within them, and that's a whole different concept. And this is something that I have only begun to be able to put into words, because what I am experiencing wasn't something that I have the language for, and so therefore I hope I've done justice in explaining this concept.
Hmm. Yeah. I think the other thing that I'd like to touch on is the fact that, you know, you brought up that we have, you know, we have core issues, right. And then there's usually up to eight realities or eight themes that right. We seem to replay over and over again. Right. And I think that can help in the healing process as well. Very by much. Just identifying.
Yeah. So what this is something that comes out of the Puerto Vallarta retreat. And if we write down eight themes that keep repeating themselves, and that doesn't mean we're functional, dysfunctional. Let's move beyond that. Let's just say, you know what? I'm always short at the end of the month. Or, you know, I'm always stressed about that. Or I am always, if we write down basically eight themes, and we take that as a self-discovery experience, and we add on to it, as we're going through it, we're going, oh, I can identify with that. There's a great, this client of mine who has had great struggles, and she continuously struggled and struggled and struggled and struggled, and she kept struggling. And then basically she realized that, and the world is changing.
Hmm.
So we're all seeing struggling as this is a normal part. Struggling isn't a normal state of consciousness. So struggling is something that we've learned. We see it in the United States, we see it in Canada, we see it in the economy, we see it in paying rent, we see that the prices are going up. We're all, in a sense, struggling. And what's happened when we talk about these layers of consciousness, as she began to embark on the concept of these layers of consciousness, she all of a sudden ended up in this wave of almost, if you were in a dream and all of a sudden you feel like you're dropping out of a plane, or, you know, that sense mm-hmm. where you're astral traveling, what happens is that when we go from one layer of consciousness, there's all of a sudden we lose our identity, or we lose control, or it feels like we're being dropped out of the sky, or we're astral traveling. And that's the first layer. And so basically what's happened is we're giving up this attachment of how we think life is going to be or needs to be. And then what I'm saying is not an easy, you know, mm-hmm. to get to. However, here's a woman that struggled a great deal of her life. And all of a sudden, as she felt that all of a sudden she had lost complete control, she shocked out of meditation. And this happens to a lot of people. So what ends up happening is that, ooh, we jolt ourselves and we come back. Well, that's actually because we've just moved beyond the first layer. And so what's happening is that we feel that we are lost, or we feel that we're disconnected, and we jolt ourselves back because the egoic self jolts us back. And then she got to the second layer, and then she got to the third layer. And so she began to realize that she had been a part of this African tribe, and that she had survival, or primitive survival, had been a core issue for her for a very long time. From food, to surviving, to managing. She came to an understanding that she had died of great poverty, and that paying the bills at the end of the month was no different than her being an African woman surviving. It is different because she has food on her table, mm-hmm. but the basic concept or theme. And then she began to sit, as the last caller, she began to sit very deeply, and each time she had a deeper sense of falling, or a deeper sense of separating, which actually gives us a form of anxiety, which is sort of interesting, because we're losing, in a sense, the entire control, or the ego is losing that sense of identity. And when she reached that place, she all of a sudden found this huge sense that she kept coming back because she was addicted to surviving.
Hmm.
Now, that by itself isn't enough, and I don't really have enough time to get into all of that concept, but that's where she derived to. And she kept going back every day. She became more, engaged or engulfed, or had this deep sense of returning to these experiences. And sometimes she would have, and sometimes she wouldn't have these experiences, but eventually she got back there And after an extended period of time, she got a phone call. Her mother had won the lottery. And here she was handed a huge, a large of money. And instead of saying, I'm going to buy myself a really big house, I'm going to do, she bought herself a little home and became, invested all of her money, wasn't interested in buying anything anymore because she had burned through that part of her karma. And the issue is not if she bought a big house or a small house, but where previously she kept spending money and didn't know where it went and didn't know why she was always broke, and yet she makes a lot of money and she couldn't really keep track of it all. She had actually found that core part of herself. And it doesn't matter if we're talking about financially or health-wise, if we only expect to reach one layer of ourselves, then that's all we're going to experience. And that is why so many of the yogi books talk about meditation, but they're not talking about that when we go from one witness state to the other witness state, we actually can feel that we're being dropped out of the sky, or astro traveling, or have a huge sense that we're losing ourselves or we're losing our identity. And that burning process needs to happen in order to get to that point where we can burn our karma. Now, I have to say to the listener that, or the individual that called, there often we burn away our karma during our dreams within our subtle bodies without having to act it out in the physical reality. And I'm not saying this is all possible, but I'm saying, or that everybody can do that. But I listened to you carefully when you were speaking. And not because I'm not suggesting that you find this state in which I speak about, but I also will suggest to you that the inner self has the capacity to burn you through this, or to burn that karma through, without having to do that in a physical form, and to burn that through. That's why when we wake up and we've had bad nightmares or good nightmares, that is because we're either working things through into the future and we come out of a dream, and yeah, dreams are all symbolics, but we can all have these great nightmares at the same time and we cannot make sense of it because we are burning a part of our karma through the subtle bodies and we don't know all who, what, when and where. And you can ask that through your dream state that this assists you in liberating you from this experience or attachment. You know, that's why people say, you know, I had a really restless dream, or I had really restless sleep, or I had these enormous nightmares. And yes, dreams are symbolic. But you see, we only look at dreams as being symbolic. We've never actually looked at the concept. Can we work things out in the subtle bodies that we don't have to work out in the physical body? So let's take this in another little step. Because we're beginning to look at someone like Eckhart Tolle, we're beginning to understand the power of now. That we as a culture, if we are in the forest, we can't even see the leaves amongst the forest. You know, we see flower that's really nice. And all of a sudden, we begin to see the flower because we're in the now. We're in the moment. That is a part of retraining ourselves. And that isn't something that is just going to happen naturally, because every person will say to themselves, oh, no, I'm in the now. But you're not. Because being in the now is a level of consciousness that takes a long time to ascertain, to be in that moment of now. You know, when people walk out of... when they have sessions with Dr. Williams and they come out, they go, oh, you know, I feel stoned, or I feel I've just, you know, entered into another world, because that whole period of time they were brought into the now. And that's why when we go to a healer, we say, is that, you know, the healer could probably be really good, or, you know, massage therapist could be really great. But what's really happening is that we are guided to be brought back into this moment right now, and to define and connect with ourselves, instead of being 5 minutes or 2 minutes or letting our emotions lead us into the future. And this is a new concept for us as a culture. And we're beginning to get the understanding. And yes, it's something that I can be in the middle of the city and be in the power of now. But for each individual, they need to find their own paradise or their own place. And it doesn't need, and it sounds materialistic, but for me, I'm needing to be by that ocean. I'm needing to be in that vast space where there is this pulse, this vibration. I also, when I was still competing with my horses, it used to be riding in the forest, where I used to ride continuously in the forest and train my horses, my Grand Prix horses, because being so much in union with that horse in the moment, being in the forest, brought me not into what I'm going to do in an hour from now. So one-pointedness, need to burn through our addictions. So talking about being in the now is a focus. It's being in this moment. It's regaining a one-pointedness. So a lot of people that read, people like Eckhart Tolle and Ken Wilber, these are great philosophers of our times. But they're not talking about that Ken Wilber does. Consciousness comes through a stream of consciousness, a pulse of consciousness, and a wave of consciousness. And so a one-pointedness opens us up to feeling that pulse of consciousness. Or we can feel this wow, this wave of consciousness. And so if I driving down the road and I am, my car is going to drive into the ditch, I would straighten out my car. That is means I need to keep my mind one-pointedness. So a part of the limbic system is this automatic repetitive part of our brain that automatically creates this habitual habits. So if I were to implement in meditation a one-pointedness, but I would also integrate that into my life, not just in meditation. So the limbic system creates repetitive pattern. That's basically part of the brain. There's a left hemisphere and there's a right hemisphere. Each of them do different things, but it's a repetitive pattern. So if we think about, okay, so there's a part of the brain that goes into automatic mode. But we don't set that up when we go into meditation. We're just waiting for an experience or waiting to change our karma or waiting to change being in the now, but that doesn't happen. So one-pointedness means that I'm going into meditation and my mind is focused on the heart, because the heart is the pulse of the universe. And if my mind wanders away, bring it right back. Wanders away, boom, bring it back. And the same thing with the power of now, or in being in the now. That is a level where we're trying to use the limbic system instead of creating a repetitive pattern that is negative. We're using the limbic system as a repetitive pattern that brings us and keeps us in this wave of the experience of the now. The reptile brain, the upper part of the reptile brain, has addictions and all the emotions, fear, confusion, addictions. It has all those emotions. And then as we get into the center core of the reptile brain, it is the oldest part of the brain. It's where we actually experience the inner self. Or we could also say that if we sustain and develop the spiritual merit and the focus of the one-pointedness, we reach a part of this ancient brain, part of the brain, which is called the limbic system. And we could also say that are we changing the chemistry of the hypothalamus? Because the hypothalamus creates emotions, creates enzymes and peptides. So does that mean that a part of the limbic system or a part of the reptile brain, as we reconnect with an ancient part of ourselves, does that actually activate a part of the hypothalamus then begins to create a new reality? Yeah, because the hypothalamus is creating peptides and emotions and addictions that we associate with. But it isn't until we get into the deepest part of one-pointedness of being in the now and finding these layers of consciousness in meditation, does the limbic system or the reptile part of the brain makes this connection. A charge is sent to the factory of our brain and we create a new reality. And so the power of in this moment, if we take away from the primitive and we go that I'm the dominant creating of the force of my life, that is great, but we cannot experience the vastness of who we are without the integration and the discipline and the focus of the power of the one-pointedness. And so when someone says, be in the moment, you don't know how to be in the moment. A lot of people don't know, or they can only sustain that. You know, for someone, for a parent to start meditating with her children is a very powerful. It isn't the act of meditation that changes the child. It is the awareness that changes the child. So it is not the actual doing. It's like sitting in front of an altar. Worshipping at an altar does absolutely nothing. Developing the consciousness of the inner self while worshipping at an altar gives you great spiritual merit. But the actual act of it does nothing without consciousness. And so to burn through these layers of karma, or to experience the vastness that we are the dominant creating, or to burn through our karma, we need to establish, or an individual has a choice to establish, the awareness of one-pointedness. It's like, it's like holding. It's a level of concentration that when you are sitting with the Dalai Lama, he sits in a huge audience, he's a great guy, doesn't have a great vocabulary when it comes to English. Everybody sits there. He was amazing. Why? Because he held the power of now, but he had a focus that allowed him to be so centered within this moment of the one-pointedness that everyone went, wow. And what's happened isn't what he said. Everyone recognized their own God self in him by him being God. And so we project this onto this great Dalai Lama, and he's a great, great being and a great leader, or Mother Teresa. But what they're actually experiencing, these are windows of ourselves. These are reflections of ourselves, because they've developed a level of concentration and oneness of now that we as a culture are not always understood or taught.
Right. And I think, you know, the big thing with being in the now, I mean, we've all had moments where we've been very present.
Right.
And it's when we're doing work that we love, or we're doing art, or we're doing things that bring a very creative process to us.
Right.
And then it's, you know, the awareness that we need to bring to ourselves of that moment is, you know, are we thinking about the past? Are we thinking about the future? Right. Most of us live in the past.
Right.
We're always bringing up all of these same issues over and over and over again. So we're, a lot of times we're in the past, or we're dreaming about the future. And right. neither of those things can happen unless right. we're in the moment.
Correct. Because we feel that we can change the past, but we don't
yes.
think we can change the future. So it's interesting. We identify with stories, and these stories, as much as, you know, when you're standing someone and someone says, oh, you know, this happened to me 25 years ago. Unless it's you've learned and you've evolved and it becomes an educational form.
But if they're still talking about it like it happened, you know, yesterday, or they're still bringing it in right. as their story, you know, they haven't.
Correct. And so it isn't that a story of the past is right or wrong, but it defines who we are. And it's something that I've learned, very interesting. And it's neither because my parents are good or bad or indifferent. We speak about our family, and we speak about our parents. And as long as we keep that same story alive, we never separate ourselves or burn that karma. And a great saint once said to another saint, as long as you keep speaking about what your parents did or did not do, you will never find your liberation.
Mm-hmm.
See them as great beings that assisted you in your liberation, and the stories in which you've carried, bury them deeply or burn them in the fire of karma, because it will liberate you.
Amen. So, yeah, I think that's a show. And I know you're coming back in September 18th or 19th, whatever the Thursday is. And that will be the first show of the new season, which Amen. will be great to have you back. And, well, I hope you enjoyed the show because I think it was a great one.
Very good.
All right.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.